This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you, men and women who have put their lives on the line for the sake of our freedom, never seeking any attention for it, but just quietly going on with their lives. Maybe they're down the street, around the corner, or just right next door. But I'm yet to find an exception to that rule, whether it's Missoula, Montana, or Rochester, New York, Dripping Springs, Texas, or Laguna, New Mexico. Wherever I go, there are veterans with remarkable stories to tell all over these United States. And we want to honor those veterans for their service and the sacrifices they've made on our behalf. We want to preserve their stories so they don't get lost under the sands of time. And along the way, we learn something new with each visit. We're educated, entertained, and at times even inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. It'll be a little different this week. We're actually going to hear from two World War II veterans, both living on California's beautiful Central Coast. News Talk 920 KVEC has been airing Hometown Heroes there for over a year, and I had a chance to visit the KVEC studios and interview these two gentlemen in a bit of a simulcast. The interviews are also going to air on the TV program High Profile, which you can catch all through the month of July on Charter Cable Channel 2 there in the San Luis Obispo area. As a result of this simulcast, the recording might sound a little different than it usually does, and I do want to throw out this caveat for you. You know, sometimes terms that were very commonplace in referring to the enemy 70 years ago, whether you're in Europe or the Pacific, they might pop up a time or two in some of these interviews, and I know they will today. These men are not trying to be insensitive or insulting. They're just reliving what they went through all those years ago. And I, of course, want to be sensitive to anyone who might take offense, but also be true to the experiences of these veterans. So I just wanted to warn you, hope when you hear something like that, you'll take it in context. These two men met each other for the first time the day we got together. One, a Navy corpsman pressed into gun crew duty on an LSM. The other, a Marine wounded on Okinawa. Believe it or not, they were born 5 days apart in February of 1924, both from Southern California. And it was really neat to see the bond that they formed in such a short period of time, born, of course, out of their similar experiences. It reminded me of what we continue to see with Honor Flight, the program flying World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. And for the Central Coast of California, where today's program was recorded, the next flight will take off from San Luis Obispo September 30th. You can go to honorflight.org to locate a hub in your area. And let's try to get as many of our World War II vets there as we can before it's too late. First up on this Hometown Heroes simulcast is Ivan Hudson, a graduate of the now defunct Excelsior Union High School in Norwalk, California, whose other alumni include the actor William Conrad and former First Lady Pat Nixon. But your hometown wasn't Norwalk, it was Bellflower. And what was life like in Bellflower before World War II?
Very quiet. They grew a lot of vegetables and fruit trees all over town. Mm-hmm. You could grow anything in Bellflower, yeah.
But you and your brother never got in any trouble or anything, did you?
No, I don't recollect any. A little bit, maybe, but I don't recollect it too much.
The year you graduated was 1942, tells me during your senior year the world changed a little bit. Do you remember December 7th, 1941?
Yeah, sure do, yeah.
How did you find out the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor?
Over the radio at home, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we heard it over the radio. That's really all we knew.
Was that a big deal to you? Did it rock your world a little bit? Did you grasp it?
No, I didn't. No, it didn't get a hold of me. It was momentous, but it didn't bother me.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, it would grab you when Uncle Sam sent you a letter, right?
That's when it grabbed me.
And you had some advice about what to do if Uncle Sam called you?
Yeah, the old-timers that I run into says, don't let the Army get you. I had 2 weeks, so I went down and got Mom and joined the Navy. Dry bed and three squares a day in the Navy. And the Army, it was mud and you never knew what you was going to get. That's why I didn't let the Army get me. I was going to be a gunner's mate, and they grabbed me and says, no, you're going to be a corpsman. And that's the way it ended up. So I had to go to school and to Farragut, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
And of course, you're from Southern California. You're thinking the Navy, I'm going to be out in the Pacific, it's going to be nice and warm. Then they send you to snowy Idaho in the dead of winter, right?
Yeah, right, dead of winter's right. Eleanor Roosevelt, that was her idea.
Did that break you in a little bit?
Yeah.
Toughen you up?
Yeah, I sure did. Got sick. Scarlet fever, the measles. Ooh.
So you knew what it was like to be a patient, but before long, you'd be helping patients at Oak Knoll Naval Hospital out in Oakland, California. And I want to ask you about some of the men you helped nurse back to health, but let's start with your supervisor, because I understand you have some very vivid memories of a particular nurse you had to work under.
Mama Gladden. Uh-huh. Yeah, very nice. But she had it in for me, and...
Why'd she have it in for you?
I have no idea. I never could figure it out, because I was a nice guy. I behaved myself all the time.
But you were a baby-faced redhead, and you were a big target?
Maybe that was it. I never could figure it out why she picked on me, but she did.
What did she do? How did she pick on you?
She put me on night duty, and any crummy job on the ward come up, she'd get Ivan. Put me in the detail. I got the kitchen detail, where I had to clean up all the trays, mop the floors, and nobody else was doing it but me. Mm-hmm. I'm the guy that got stuck with it.
But during your time there, the wars started. There's already some fighting in the Pacific, and you actually had to deal with some of the casualties from the Marines in the Pacific?
Guadalcanal. That's who was on the ward. It was all Guadalcanal guys, with the exception of a very few.
What kind of injuries did you see? I'm sure that made an impression on you, the state these guys are in.
It was all bedfast, and they had bed sores because they couldn't move. Just lay in that bed. They just lay there and suffer. With various injuries, you know, wounds and whatnot.
Was that hard to see and to know that, you know, you might be heading overseas at some point, some of the same areas these guys are coming from?
Yeah, I thought a lot about it, yeah. And everybody else did think about it, too. Every day they would go out and look at the list, and it was the dreaded list. And if your name was on that list, that meant you was going into the Marine Corps as a corpsman. And that they were scared to death to get... be sitting in the Marine Corps as a corpsman, because you're running around following the Marines, and the percentage of getting shot was pretty high. You just had to get out there and take care of the Marines that were being shot at. Anyway, this buddy of mine, one day he walked out there, and he saw his name on the list, and he broke down and just cried like a baby. It really upset him, and I felt so bad for him. My name never showed up to that job. But his did, and I never saw him again. He just disappeared, so I don't know what ever happened. I guess they grabbed him and shipped him out.
You're not complaining that your name never showed up on that list?
That's right. I was very fortunate. That's the way I look at it. I was fortunate it didn't show up on the list.
Yeah, you never had to follow Marines into combat, but you would head overseas as a pharmacist mate on LSM 107. That's a transport ship. LSM, of course, stands for Landing Ship Medium. You guys were hauling oil, gas, troops, vehicles. And I understand you got a really encouraging speech from the captain of your ship.
Yeah, he said, the equipment on this ship is not expendable, meaning the guns and the ammo. But he says, you men are expendable. And we just looked at each other because we didn't get it. You know, what are you going to do? You're expendable. Everybody felt real good about that.
I'm sure. How did that make you feel when it did sink in and you realized what he was really saying?
Like nothing. Yeah, we just looked at each other. We felt bad anyway, you know. It just made us feel worse, put it that way.
Well, and pretty soon you would find out, I guess, what it was he meant. Every veteran can remember that moment where the war became real for him. This isn't a game or an idea anymore. This is life or death. Do you remember a moment like that?
Yeah, the Philippines, yeah. We had to cruise along there. The Japs were hiding in the forest there. Luzon, that's it. You've heard of Luzon?
Mm-hmm.
And our job was to, we only drew 4 feet of water. I was in the amphibs, and it was shallow, and we could get pretty close. So the Army went over and dropped the flares over the jungle there and trying to force the Japs to run out on the beach so we could get them. And, and it never happened. They were stuck in that forest, and they didn't come out.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway... I was assigned to a 50 caliber machine gun. We had the gunner, and then I was a loader.
Uh-huh.
You know, feed the belt in with the shells, you know.
Right.
That was my job. One time there, we pulled in, we hit the beach there, and we always had to drop the anchor in the back and hit the beach. The Japs shot a mortar over the jungle and blew the guy on the fantail, he on a 50 caliber, they blew him off, and we was in a hell of a mess there, trying to get off the beach. Because the anchor was dropped back there, and we had to pull back, see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a hell of a time, but we made it.
And I want to dive a little deeper on that. So basically, you're saying this was a pretty close call, and that could have been the end of it for you that day. I mean,
right.
There's enemy artillery coming. How close to you?
I don't know. One side, then the other side, and they miss.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God they hit the back of the fantail, though, and just knocked the end of it off. But the guy in the back, that's all we got hit, where we were lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I figured they had us lined up, and the next one would hit us.
Yeah.
But it did, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
They missed us, just that one. I figured that was it, because we couldn't get off the beach, see?
Did you hear much from your family when you were overseas?
When I write Mom a letter, I tried to put something under the stamp, you know, and put the stamp on top of it, a little message about where we were at.
Yeah.
Everything was taboo, no. Well, everything was censored.
And I've heard some of those stories.
Yeah.
They'd actually take out the razor blade and cut out different words if you tried to reveal anything about your location, but...
Yeah.
The
You're
stuff
right.
that you wrote under the stamp, did you actually get those through to your...
Yeah, they got through.
All right.
Yeah.
Clever.
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
someone tell you that, or you figured that out on your own?
I forget, really, but anyway, I guess I figured it out. Somebody else might have done it, though.
What was the maybe most jarring thing that you saw or witnessed, the thing that kind of still sticks with you today?
I guess that one incident. The others, everything else was just waiting for something to happen, kind of. Like on Okinawa, we had a smoke machine attached to the back of the ship, and our job was to twine around in between the big ships and lay that smoke. So when the kamikazes come in, they couldn't see them.
Right.
That was a big thing right at that time, those kamikazes.
And you witnessed some kamikazes.
Yeah, witness comes pretty bad there.
You Can know. You tell us about that, what you saw?
Come in there, do about 400 miles an hour in those zeros, just skimming over that water like that. And they didn't bother us because we had a small ship, but sitting right over there was an LST, which was three times bigger than us landing ship tank. Big. This Jap went right by. We tried to lead him with the 50s, but it's hard to do when the guy's going sideways. And you're trying to, you got to lead him. You miss him. And he hit that LST, and that was a big mess. It didn't sink, though, but it was, there we were watching it right off.
And you were still on those guns at that time? You were part of those gun crews?
Yeah, part of the gun, yeah.
I know it was a long time ago, but I'm sure you remember what that felt like. Did you ever feel scared? Did you ever feel like, this might be it for me?
Well, the only thing we were scared about, if it was going to hit us. We had to figure it out later that we were small, and that's why they didn't bother us.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
going to
waste a pilot in a plane on a little ship like us, put 65 people on. That was our crew, 65
mm-hmm.
people. And that's what we figured out. They wanted the big one, so an LST was pretty good size, so they hit that. And transports around there, and cruisers, destroyers.
I'm imagining most of the people watching this and listening to this didn't experience anything like what you went through or have seen anything like this. Can you help us understand how severe some of these situations were? I'm sure on some of these areas you probably saw some of the after effects and the devastation.
Yeah, this one young fellow, we were all young, of course, 19 or 20. This one guy, his hair turned white right after one of the scares like that, one of the little battles, Yeah, his hair turned white just overnight, just like that.
He had dark hair.
Right, he had dark hair and it turned white. It was amazing. Never saw anything like that. Nerves, all nerves. We never knew anything out there in that ship because the skipper didn't communicate with us at all. We didn't know the war was over until 15 days later.
Really?
Yeah.
Where were you?
Okinawa, waiting for we were going to hit the mainland of Jap in November. Because I remember when the guy ran out of the conning tower there and he says, the war's over. And he went back in, come back out. Nope, it's not over. Went back in, came out again, said, yeah, it's over.
If you were preparing for the invasion of Japan,
yeah.
I suppose those atomic bombs maybe saved your life?
Oh, they did. Truman, Harry Truman. There was the guy. There was the angel, Harry Truman. He told him to drop it, and otherwise we'd have hit the beach, and they figured about a million guys maybe would have. We'd have been the first or second wave, and we'd have bought it sometime in there.
So your LSM would have been landing troops
right.
and vehicles
right.
on mainland Japan?
Yeah, troops and... oil and gas. We never knew sometimes what we were going to haul. We just hauled everything, really.
Were you ever really concerned that you wouldn't come home? Was that ever a question in your mind?
Yeah, day and night. It kind of covers you like a blanket. You just, one day at a time. You get up, you know, you're alive. What's going to happen today? Jap going to get you or what? You never knew. Always sit thinking, though. You're thinking all the time. What's going to happen next?
So I guess you were pretty thankful to come home.
Yeah, I really was. It was amazing, I thought, that we made it.
Never had to deal with a typhoon or any wild weather or anything?
Oh, yeah, forgot about that. We got caught in that typhoon in 45. It was a big one. Yeah, took out a lot of the little ships. It busted our fantail, and we got a big leak in the fantail, so they had to seal it off, tighten the dogs, you know, at the back.
Yeah.
And we went in. When we got to the States, we were like this, a dragon, but we made it. That was really bad.
What did that feel like on your ship? I don't think most of us have ever been on an LSM in the middle of a typhoon.
You go from the bottom, and you just takes you right up about 50 feet up in the air, then whoosh, drops you right back down the bottom again. And this is the way it went. And you wonder each time if you're going to get back up again. You just hang on and wait.
And what are you hanging on to? Where are you on the ship?
Yeah, I was in the sick bay and just plastered to the wall, you know, holding on. Then I'd get outside and get up on the deck, and I had plenty of support up there on the lines, you know, and just watch the waves. Beautiful sight.
Beautiful sight.
Yeah, beautiful sight. Way up there, and you drop you right down like that again at the bottom. Pretty jarring, though. It was real jarring.
Yeah, I think I'd be scared out of my wits in a moment like that.
Yeah, we were. Yeah.
And then when your fantail cracks, that would shake things up a little bit more.
Yeah, that shook everything up real good.
Were you thinking you guys might have to abandon ship?
Yeah, we were, but we didn't. We only went down so far in the fantail. It started dragging, but it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So there was water in the fantail, but they had it sealed off. So there we were. And we made it. It took us 2 months to get back to the States, so 10 miles an hour.
What was the best part about coming home for you?
The realization that the war was over and that you was going to go on with your life, mm-hmm. whatever it might be.
When you think back on it now, you look at those pictures of this baby-faced sailor. What are you most thankful for and what are you most proud of?
That I made it. And I got through the whole thing. I guess that would be it. Yeah. Good experience.
Yeah?
Yeah, good experience.
That is 90-year-old Navy veteran Ivan Hudson. And up next, we're going to meet his newfound friend, John Wilcox, who fought with the 1st Marine Division in the often overlooked but very bloody battle for Peleliu and was later wounded while serving on Okinawa. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.